Good afternoon. It is One Bell of the Afternoon Watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, and today I am back in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio. Having been to far places, having participated in the change of command for the Coast Guard cutter Polar Star, having broadcast from what was formerly the Mare Island Naval Shipyard and is now privately owned. And I'm back for at least a while. So my greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people, and not just Captain Joe's people, but everybody who is traveling to Vashon for either my grandson Joel's wedding, or for the Strawberry Festival, or both. For certainly some of the many who are coming to Joel's wedding, which is going to be held at Captain's Quarters on my land. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on because there have been some interesting planning situations. The wedding is on Friday, and it is certainly going to happen that a number of the people who are coming to the wedding are also camping on my property and will therefore be in place for Strawberry Festival on Saturday. I urge everyone who is coming on the island who has never been on the magical island of Vashon before and who has never taken a voyage in our ferry system that once they get on the island that they keep lookouts as far forward in the eyes of the ship as is practicable because right now we have many deer, and those deer have been very busy and prolific, and now we have a number of spotted fawns. I have a mom and two spotted fawns that are sharing the campground on my property with the campers that are starting to come in as early as tomorrow, Wednesday. So the admonition is that those lookouts be both placed as far forward as possible to give as much warning as possible, but that they also be fully alert. Speed limits on the island are not high. They are kept low on purpose, and that's because we have children, and we have bicycles, and we have animals. We often have fowl that have escaped from their pens and are running around all over the island. So that's the first thing. Everybody pay attention to what's going on around them and don't take out any of our children, bicycles, or wildlife. The second admonition is that when you approach the ferry from either end, and most of Captain Joe's people who are coming to Joel's wedding will be coming from the south, that queue jumping is not only bad form, but if apprehended by an eager employee of the Washington State Ferry System, the very least that will happen is that you get put all the way back to the end of the line of the queue. It does happen, and sometimes it happens by people who just don't know what the drill is. But mostly it happens by people who believe that waiting in line is something that they should not ever have to do, that they are far too important, that they have far more urgent business than all of those other poor people that are in the line and who are watching the rules. So that's the second thing. Take your turn on the ferries. And if you think that it costs quite a bit to get on the island, keep in mind that to get off the island, There is no charge. Those are my greetings today. And my binnacle list is a good one in one regard and not so good in another. Dealing first with the good part, the two of my friends of family rank who were going to have surgery during the week, that has now happened. And in both cases, the surgeries were successful. They're both of them now recovering. Kevin, with the orthopedic surgery, no doubt is going to be a spring butt of the first rank in a very short period of time. No more electric scooters for him. My other friend of family rank is Jay, and Jay is the one who has the cancer inside his mouth. He sent me a photograph of himself shortly after surgery, and he pointed out that he now looks like a chipmunk because they went in and there now are two very large scars, and the swelling does indeed make him look like a somewhat chronologically challenged chipmunk. I sent a signal back and I said, far better to be a chronologically challenged chipmunk than to be in a box draped with a flag awaiting proper folding and presentation. The part of the binnacle list today which is not so good is that even as late as today, another friend of family rank had taken a fall, and that's the second one that has been reported to me. Signals are coming in from all over the world relating these things. And I pass them on the binnacle list because if any of Captain Joe's people are of the praying sort, then they know to put the people that are on the binnacle list on the prayer list. And if they are not of the praying sort, but they are in a position to send good signals across the airwaves on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live from Singapore on one side of the world to Stockholm, of which... what is the capital of Stockholm, of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital? A little aberration there. And so the signals keep coming in with all of these reports. Two falls, two serious falls, serious damage. So it is, as always, my hope, my wish, and my command that each of you who occupy a place on the binnacle list, you also know that you occupy a place close to my heart. And each of you are in the palm of my hand, and the good wishes that go out from the Voice of Vashon, from your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, I hope are sufficient to encourage you to do two things. The first one is to carry on insofar as you're able, even if it's necessary to force yourself through a little bit of discomfort. And secondly, to follow strictly the instructions of your particular medical practitioner so that you will come off of the binnacle list in the approved manner, which is not to be in that box with the flag if you are entitled to have a flag draped over the box. This week, coming up on Friday, is my grandson Joel's wedding at Captain's Quarters. I'm going to talk just a little bit about this because there's some interesting planning things that have happened as all of this goes together. First of all, Joel has never served in the military. He's not been trained in the military planning process. And so as we have gone through the time from the time that he asked me if he and Maddie, his young lady, could be wed on my property, and I said, yes, of course. That is exactly why Mary R. and I bought that property, was so that it would be exactly what it's become, a place for family, friends, shipmates, classmates, friends of family rank, to come for a place of joy, a place of reflection, a place of repair, if that's needed. It is not a sad place. And although the memory of Mary R. is alive and well, it is not a shrine to her. The shrine to her is all of our children, our grandchildren, and now, as hard as it is for many people to accept, and for me to accept even so, great-grandchildren. So Joel has never served in the military. He is a young man who has redeemed himself from some very serious problems that he had as a what we call a teenager. And he did this, he himself made the decision that it was time for him to behave like one of the adults. And I give him high marks for that. In the planning process, oh, by the way, the operations order for this whole thing is only slightly less involved, less complicated, and shorter than the operations order for the Normandy invasion, D-Day, 6th of June, 1944. Joel's wedding is only slightly less, and the op order for that is only slightly shorter. One of the things that I had said was, at the time that he asked me about this, I said, if there be anybody who would like to camp on my property, we can organize that over the 4th of July and a number of other times before that. We have set up campgrounds, and I've had as many as 10 or 12 tents set up. But hearing nothing as the months, the weeks, the days, and now hours went by, I heard nothing about campers and therefore made an assumption. My tactical error there was to make this assumption. A couple of weeks ago, I sent Joel a signal, and I said, it's time for a come-to-the-captain talk, because we want to make sure that we have all of the holes plugged in this hull, this ship that we have constructed called Your Wedding. And I said, Thursday at 7 o'clock, 1900 hours, is when we're going to have this come-to-the-captain talk. And precisely, or almost precisely, at 1900 hours on that Thursday, 2 weeks ago, Joel called. And in my signal to him in which we set this up, I said, having heard nothing about campers, I'm making the assumption that no one is availing themselves of that particular opportunity. But should somebody on a short notice appear, tent behind, trailing behind, and flashlight, what the Brits call a torch, in hand, and wanting to camp, I said, we can certainly manage that. So when Joel and I had our greetings, first of all, greetings, respectful greetings on both sides, of this telephone call, and he said, oh, Grandpa, I guess I forgot to tell you. There are 25 people who have signed up to camp and 15 tents. Now, one of the guiding principles of my entire professional life is that the captain shall show no fear. The others, of course, are that we accomplish the mission and we take care of the people that are entrusted to us to carry out that mission. And the captain's corollary to that is the old cavalry saying, the good general ensures that his men and his horses are fed before himself. You all have heard me say those three things many times over, and you will hear me say them again many times over because they're so important. And they capture together the entire business of leadership. We don't need large manuals, and we don't need commissions and things like that. And all three of those principles are going to be put into place because now I have at least 15 tents and 25 campers. Next week on this broadcast, you will get my report as to how it all went. But I can assure you that with everybody understanding, everybody that's coming, and there are many, and there are many more than what we had originally planned on, that everybody that's coming is going to have a wonderful time. I have put the word out to all hands, to all guests, that they are guests in a country house on a country island, and that we have children and bicycles and animals everywhere. It's going to be a glorious, glorious time. A little rustic. We haven't had any rain for a long time, so things are a little bit brown. I have been doing some watering, but we watch our water consumption pretty carefully because all of the water that we drink here on the island comes from the aquifer underneath us. We don't bring any water over from the mainland. So, at the same time, this weekend is Strawberry Festival. And so the ferry system is going to be challenged to the utmost. It is my hope and my wish, and it would certainly be my command if I were in a position to command it, that the ferry system will be able to handle. This is not the time for the North End to go to the one boat system or for South or Chechamoka on the South End to decide that they do not have enough people to man her up so that they can keep going back and forth and bringing Captain Joe's people here for both Joel's wedding and for Strawberry Festival. On Sunday, the ever-lovely Kate, the executive director for Voice of Vashon, and your captain will be broadcasting the classic car parade here on the island. It is at 10 o'clock. Voice of Vashon 101.9 and streaming live, voiceofvashon.org. And Kate and I will be doing a reprise of what she and I anyway think was a highly successful broadcast last year. The one thing that we did not get right, and I'm completely responsible for this because I do talk a lot, and that is that because I took longer for each vehicle, I knew something about just about every car, and I knew most of the people that were driving them, and so this was sort of a family reunion, and it took longer than it should have to get the front end of the parade through, and some of the more senior vehicles in the aft end of the parade were overheating. So I am committed to doing better about that than we did before. A couple of interesting things have happened since the last time that I talked about, other than things like changes of command. During the recent NATO summit in Washington, D.C., Finland, Canada, and the United States issued apparently either some sort of a compact or an agreement or maybe just a press release about the construction, interlocking construction of icebreakers to defend the Arctic. Interesting here because for two reasons. The first one is that Canada is committed to building, after many, many years, many decades even, their large icebreaker to defend and protect their Arctic frontier, going to be built by Davies in, or at least assembled, probably the pieces to it will be built in all different places in Canada. The other is, so that one's apparently going to happen. My old friend, Captain Duke Snyder, one of the premier icebreaker captains in the world, and who is one of the fathers of the Polar Code from the International Maritime Organization. I saw Duke not too long ago at a change of command ceremony, and he was giving me a little bit of a hard time because the commitment on the part of Canada to build their big icebreaker is much firmer than ours, which continues to lollygag and skylark all over the atmosphere, and that's a subject for another time. The second part of this report is that Finland has built icebreakers for probably 100 years. At the end of World War II, the Russians were awarded reparations from the war between Finland and Russia at the beginning of World War II, and they chose to take those reparations in the form of icebreakers that the Finns would build for them. So a number of the conventional powered icebreakers that the Russians have, the ones that they deploy to Antarctica, for example, were built in Finland. And if you look at them, you'll see the characteristic Finnish architecture. Very, very tall superstructure. And they were built to operate in the Baltic, which is relatively shallow. Freezes up every year. And so we're not saying that these ships normally make the long Trans-Pacific passage all the way to Antarctica. But they're very sturdy ships, and when we were working on the design parameters for Healy, the ship that we now know as Healy, the Finns, in the form of the company Wärtsilä, came to me and wanted to put in a bid and put in a sample of what they could do. And I said in these discussions, which were sometimes held in places other than my office, that that we were bound by statute to build in a U.S. yard. And they said, well, Captain Joe, no problem there. We'll just buy a U.S. yard and we will build there. And that's exactly what has happened with a couple of companies. For example, Fincantieri, the Italian company Fincantieri, bought a Great Lakes shipyard, a very old line Great Lakes shipyard. So Finland, Canada, and the U.S. Our commander-in-chief was part of this. I don't know. I hope he was well briefed, but I don't know what his level of interest in icebreakers is. It is my hope that his level of interest, or that of his national security people, National Security Advisor Sullivan, for example, are really concerned, because the Russian bear, the claws in the Russian bear, are going to come out, and they're going to come out, I think, pretty soon. I'm talking about other ships operating in the Arctic, this time off of the coast of Alaska out in the Aleutian chain. Chinese warships have been seen out there just in the last couple of weeks. They are in international waters, but they are inside the exclusive economic zone. That's 200 miles from the coastline. Still international waters. Ships have a right to be there. But they are within the zone in which a flag state has the right to whatever resources are within that 200-mile limit. That's a very interesting treaty. I was involved in the enforcement of that particular rule when I was captain in UNIMAC, of whom my XO was and remains one of my really good friends. And we were enforcing international treaties about fisheries up off of the Grand Banks. So the Chinese are working Alaska. They are working, of course, we talked last week or the week before that, about their transits across the Northeast Passage, across the top of Siberia, with the assistance of the Russian nuclear-powered icebreakers. So we'll be watching all of that. My book this week is one that I may have done before, but it's one of my favorites. And if I've done it before, I'm going to do it again. It's called A Short Bright Flash. The subtitle is Augustine Fresnel and the Birth of the Modern Lighthouse, and the author is Teresa Levitt. And Dr. Levitt works out of Ole Miss. She is a historian of international repute. And when she published this book, I somehow picked up on it, and she may have even sent me a letter, because my name in the lighthouse community is attached to Point Robinson. In any case, Dr. Levitt is one of Captain Joe's people, and I bought a number of copies of the book, had her sign them, and we sold them, and now they're all sold out in the ship store here at Point Robinson. So I recommend it highly. It's a beautifully produced book. It's on lovely hard paper. The photographs are beautiful in it. The explanations of how different kinds of lighthouses work is incredibly well researched. It has a wonderful bibliography and a great index. It is a wonderful book, and not just to have to read it one time and pass it on to somebody else, but to buy and to keep. And if someone were to buy one, let us say from that purveyor of books of all sorts, Amazon.com, if one were to buy it and then to send it to Dr. Levitt and say, Captain Joe said you would sign this book, I know that she will do that. So many thanks to Teresa for this. It is one of my favorite books about lighthouses, not just because it's so beautifully produced and so well researched, but because it was written by a friend, and I especially treasure books that are written by friends. Mine, my copy has a lovely inscription in it, and modesty requires that I not read it out loud. We're coming to, once again, far too quickly, the end of my time together, but I did want to share with you a little bit about the upcoming wedding, because it's an interesting thing to put on something like this. When I was a student at the Armed Forces Staff College, one of the problems that was put before us was to write the operations order, the operations plan, and then from that plan to write various operations orders for the invasion of Albania. And the invasion of Albania, as done by students at the Armed Forces Staff College, which now has another name, but it's still in the same place in Norfolk. And the invasion of Albania was not nearly as complicated as the invasion of Normandy, and not nearly as complicated as Joel's wedding. Oh, and Joel's wedding is also going to have a hoopah. And on that, I will give you a report for sure next week. So, dear ones all, this is your Captain Joe. I am, as always, up in the captain's chair. I'm on station and watching properly. And as always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. Please watch out for each other as you go through the week. Next week, we will be here. I will be here. And I will give you a report on all of the things that we discussed today, which are still Irish penance. Everybody take care of each other. Watch your six. This is your Captain Joe on station and watching properly.